Hey, I'm Carmen, host of Oyster's New World of Work podcast. I'm the community lead here at Oyster, and I'm also an organizational and business psychologist. I'm Spanish, but have lived my whole life in the Netherlands, Italy, and the UK. And now I live in sunny Barcelona. I love helping people thrive in the workplace. Part of my role is leading our People Builders community, which is a place where people and culture leaders, managers of all kinds, and future of work pioneers come to find the connections, answers, and tools that they need to navigate this complex world of remote and distributed work. Throughout my career, I've had the chance to connect with so many great leaders. I've heard their wins, their challenges, and helped uncover hidden opportunities. I hope to share some of that knowledge with you on this podcast. Over the next season, we will be diving into topics that are top of mind for today's people leaders. From supporting Gen Z in the workplace to the rise of fractional work, you'll hear from leaders who are building forward-thinking, innovative, and compassionate workplaces. Today, we chat with Craig Foreman, a trailblazer in cultural innovation who is known for melding data-driven insights with organizational psychology. Craig and I used to be coworkers, so I was so excited to pick his brain again. Craig has made a very interesting career for himself by blending strategic data-driven insights with a uniquely human-centric approach. We jump into the topic of non-promotion-based employee growth strategies, and Craig shares how companies can impact their culture, increase engagement, and foster growth without increasing salaries. Well, Craig, welcome to the new world of work. I am super, super excited to have you join us today, in particular because of many things. Well, first of all, we share that we are both organizational psychologists, so I'm super intrigued to kind of dive into that side of things. And of course, for those of you that might not know already, we both used to work at CultureAmp together as well. So Craig and I are old colleagues and now friends as well. So welcome, welcome, Craig.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. I really appreciate you inviting me here. And like you said, the fact that we're going to have this conversation, but we also share this framework on how we think about culture and value it and measure it. I look forward to having this conversation with you. I agree. It's whenever I meet with people when they have a similar background, it's unique and special. So glad to be here.
Oh, amazing. And for our listeners, I'd love it if you could, you know, state your name, introduce yourself briefly, and just share a little bit about your career experience so far.
Yeah. So, hey, everybody. My name is Craig Foreman. I am currently the founder of an organization called Culture Seat Consulting, where we help organizations think about their employee listening strategies. How are they approaching this? And then how are they listening at scale, collecting data, and then leveraging data, most importantly, to support leadership, to inform them on how to build great workplace culture. And I think it's something that's so greatly missing. And we'll talk about that. My background, some of the key things. I'm a veteran of the U.S. Air Force. So I spent 4 years in the United States Air Force. I used that to pay for college. I got my undergraduate degree in business. During that time, I had come to California. I grew up in Florida. I loved California, so I moved back and set up my life here. I eventually decided to get a master's degree. And the only thing that really I could pull the plug on was organizational psychology. And I did it, and I loved every minute of it. I knew that that was the space for me. Came up in Bay Area with the tech kind of rising, you know, starting in 2011, and came up through HR technology. So worked at companies like Achievers, Recognition Rewards, LinkedIn, looking at talent, and then landed at CultureAmp, where I was ultimately a lead people scientist there. I got to spend 6 years working with clients to do just that, to use data. I'm sure we'll talk about that more. And then May of 2023, I took the biggest leap of my life, which was to start consulting and as a way to be able to offer this and help more organizations. I saw that there was a big need, and that's what I've been up to. And it's been an amazing, incredible, intense journey ever since. And here I am with you.
And I can't wait to dig in more. And actually, I'd love to hear a little bit more about the organizational psychology piece. So how do you currently use organizational psych alongside, you know, the data piece to help organizations build culture?
I think what I'd say to that is, for me at least, it started with, I mean, like the org psych was really more of came out of the deeper passion and figuring this out. Like long before I knew about org psych as a career, as a degree, I knew that I loved people. I knew I was curious and interested in people. It was for early on, it was for me a survival mechanism. I moved a lot, so just kind of fitting in and whatnot. But I also had the opportunity, because of my upbringing, lots of different jobs, including the military, working in restaurants, working like the whole gamut. And I think my own personal struggles in the workplace and joys, you know, looking at areas where when there were many times where things really seemed to align, where it felt good to work there. We were doing great work. The company was succeeding. And that fascinated me. And I also had lots of things where it was quite the opposite, where it was toxic or really bad. And I think it always drove me to think these two things don't have to be at odds, like people enjoying their work and really feeling like they can flourish and high-performing organizations. So I think my journey was really led by that curiosity, which ultimately led me to the degree. So how do I use it? I use it all the time. I mean, I think it's the foundation and it gives me a framework and a way to think about and communicate to organizations and leaders what all this means. You know, it's hard. Mm-hmm. That's the biggest challenge. Is I think that most people in the corporate world have a hard time they feel it, they know it, but they have a hard time getting their heads around it and how to quantify it and talk about it and manage it. So that foundational piece mixed with then the data, which the data only helps expand on my love of org psych, I think is the most powerful driver of change. And the same thing I try to do in organizations, empower them with more information and data so they can, you know, build great, great workplace cultures and do it in a quantifiable way.
Mm, yeah. And I really resonate with this because it's almost like it's this intangible feeling, right? Or aspect. And then the data really actually puts the measurement and the metric to it, to something that is sometimes not easy to explain.
We all know it. We all know it. If I sat anybody down and said, think about a really bad cultural experience, you know, among other people, think about a great one, work or not.
Yeah.
I think that's the thing is that we are highly attuned to culture, that we all sense and feel it. I think it's so right brain that it's hard to get your linear head around it. And I think that's, sometimes I say that I represent the right brain in a heavily left brain. I mean, the corporate world, it leans particularly, you know, very linear, very measurable, very quantifiable. But the reality is there's another side of the world and how do we balance those two? And I think that I represent that using data, ironically.
I love that balance and the harmony between those two. So before diving into this more, because I want to get into it already, but I'd love to hear, you know, if you would be able to distill your overall personal career mission into an elevator pitch, what would it be?
I'm really happy you asked this question. And it's a perfect question because I think it's a really important part of my journey. And anybody listening to this that is interested in it, just professionally, but particularly in the space, I think for me, I told you that the career had a windy road and all these indicators were there that I love this, but it definitely was not clear for a long time. And I think the piece that helped me, I had done a lot of personal work probably 12 or 13 years ago now. And one of those things was I got clear on my personal mission statement and professional mission statement. And that was when everything started to come into focus and any of what we're talking about today began. And that was to help the world work better by improving the places we work. And even when I first came up with it, where I not just came up with it, but knew it, it took me a while to process and own that. Like, it's one thing that, you know, it's not what I wanted. It's just what everything seemed to point towards. And once I got clear on that and said, this is what I'm working towards, then it kind of helped direct everything that I did. So all of my work, no matter, I'll meet clients where they are, but my work for me is really how to do all this stuff that we're talking about, but is a way to improve our world.
Mm, I love it. And so, Craig, right now at Culture Seek Consulting, you're working with a lot of different companies mm-hmm. to really build high-performing cultures. So I'd love to dive into this a little bit more. And could you break down exactly what makes a culture high-performing?
Look, I love these questions because they're complicated and they're complex. But because of that, these are the questions I've been chewing on for so long and had a lot of time to think about.
Yeah.
And quite frankly, with this one, I do think that I've kind of really come up in my mind with a simple mental model that I use that can expand and be very big. But I think if I was talking to an executive about this, I think what we're looking for is that we have a solid way to measure and understand employee engagement. When I say employee engagement, I'm talking about this idea of kind of what seems to be most models hold, this idea of say, stay and strive or thrive, this idea of people are proud and would recommend your workplace. They see themselves there. They're not actively looking, you know, in most situations. And thrive is that willingness to go above and beyond. If you have that employee, most people would agree you've got a pretty strong employee. And if your employee base is that way. So when I think about high performing workplace culture, what I think about is, can we get organizations number one to understand what that is and measure it? And at the same time, you know, keep that strong or slowly growing while also keeping an eye on revenue per employee. Meaning if you can keep your engagement high while you're steadily increasing your revenue per employee, I think that's the magic number right there, that, you know, companies are becoming more and more profitable based on how much it costs them to have their employees, while at the same time, engagement stays strong. And I think if you watch those two, and those are important, if your engagement's going off a cliff, but your performance is going up, I think you're facing, you know, you got short term win and a long term problem. So yeah. I always start with that, and we could pick each of those apart, particularly on the engagement side. But I think to me, that's the model that I really have landed on and feel strongly about.
Mm. And that's such a good point as well, because if performance is going up, but then engagement is going down, it's, you know, what's happening? What sacrifices are being made here? What's the cost, right? Because clearly something is not balancing in that case.
And the example you just said, did you say, so yeah, engagement, yeah, we have to think about that.
Engagement down, performance up.
But yeah. Flip it the other way. Like, let's be honest, right? And I think it's important. Really high engagement, everybody's happy, and the company is like not making money and not performing financially, it ceases to exist. So that culture yeah. doesn't exist anymore. And I think we need to, like, in this conversation, remember that, because sometimes that gets out of skew, that this thing that we come together for lots of reasons, for lots of things. But when we're talking about workplace culture, if the thing we're coming together to achieve is not working, us coming together goes away. So I think it's important yeah. to see it on both sides.
100%. 100%. And so I guess that perfectly leads to my next question as well, around, you know, if we want to see continuous growth in a company, right, that performance that we want to see keep going up, what elements of culture do we need to have in place here? So how do we foster a high performance culture if we want to keep growing without that engagement dropping or burnout, et cetera? So talk to me a bit more about that.
I mean, I think when an organization first, you know, the work that you've done, the work that I've done. So we, you know, not every company, but when we see companies that get a good system in place to truly quantify and evaluate culture in some sort of efficient and effective way, it really becomes the same as what every other problem an organization looks at. Sales, marketing, that what blows my mind is that you see every company doing it, because for so long we've had such tight metrics on the things that are easy to quantify, like sales, like marketing. Like, I think culture and the idea of how to measure it has come a long way in the last 10 to 15 years, particularly for smaller organizations. So I think once what I know and what you know, but I think a lot of organizations don't quite understand, is once they get that set up, it becomes a very similar process. I mean, mm-hmm. simply getting a strong baseline that's, and, you know, we can talk more about that later, about, you know, how to discuss, talk about, understand, and trust this data. You just start looking at it like every other decision, you know, that yeah. when I go to an organization and say, look, your biggest driver that we see across your data for engagement is open and honest two-way communication, and this team is 15 points off of that. Now it becomes a much more clear decision. Just as I told yeah. you, you're spending all this money on marketing and nothing's happening there, or this area is going really well, you're going to focus more there. You're going to come up with a solution. So I think we work with a lot of smart people. And I think in the end of the day, when we can help clear the noise and get them focused on what the right problems are to solve, they can solve them. So that's how I think about it, is, you know, and you know me, I love all the soft fuzzy stuff, but at the end of the day, it's the quantifying it for people in a way that I trust mm-hmm. and believe, that I think feels good and is in support of building healthy cultures for people and allowing smart people to solve problems, because they know their companies better than I do.
Yeah, yeah. And it adds the proof, right, to what you're saying. It's not just, oh, I think that we should go in this direction, or I think the communication isn't going well. You can actually base it off of a data point.
But when we say it like that, we think about that's as if you ran a survey and you had validation. What I love is this idea of the cycle, because not only is it validation to prove what we see, but then it lets us create hypotheses, smart hypotheses on what we think.
Yes.
If we're going to do X, Y, and Z, we really believe based on the data, we're going to impact that. Now go do X, Y, Z, and let's do that again. And now we've moved from just a data point to a process of iteration. And let's be real, culture is always changing. The external environment is changing. Your internal environment is changing. Your leadership's changing. So I often say there's no finish line in culture, you know. And I think when I work with leaders, the first thing is you're so used to solving problems and moving on. If you're going to mm-hmm. be committed to this, you're always going to be solving for it, period.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And Craig, I remember when we both used to work at CultureAmp, that one of the key points that would come up across companies, across the globe, across industries, across growth stages was employees' need for learning and development, you know, growth in some way, or promotions or lateral movements or whatever it might be, but growth in some way. And I think we find ourselves in an interesting position now where a lot of companies don't have as many resources or as much funding for, you know, promotion strategies or growth strategies. So what we're seeing a lot is, you know, the rise of non-promotion based employee growth strategies. And I'd love to hear from your side, you know, how have the current workplace dynamics created this shift towards more non-promotion based strategies? And is this something that you see a lot in the companies that you're working with now in terms of culture as well?
Yeah, I mean, well, first, you talk back to the days that we both shared at CultureAmp, and there was a piece of research probably in the last couple of years that I was there. You know, CultureAmp was always doing a lot of research, but one I still reference to this day, and it probably still holds, it was there 2 years ago. And that was, they looked across, you know, CultureAmp has so much data, and they also have employee files, so they can see who's coming, who's going. So over time, they can look back and like do an analysis of people that left and what they said, and people that joined and what they said. And I thought it was fascinating. One of the pieces of research said the number one thing reason people joined organizations was for development. And the number one reason people left organizations was because of development. So again, back to that story, think about it like sales or marketing. If I told you that and you said, well, we can't afford that, like, okay. Like, it should be an imperative strategy, especially now. I think the workforce has shifted, particularly with millennials and younger. Like, I think those numbers even go up, this idea of I need to be growing. And because that is ultimately the payoff anymore. Everybody's worked so hard to just get comp exactly in one spot. And you know, so I think when you just say all that's table stakes, if you've done a good job with that, and any good employee is going to expect that, then what? And I think what is fine, but tell me how I'm going to develop my career and how I'm going to grow. So I think number one, I like to think about that. The second, you asked about just the non. Look, I think it's always been a problem. As long as we have these hierarchical, or we set up our organizations and hierarchical pyramid structures, this is an ongoing issue. And probably one of the core issues of culture is that you've created a system where naturally to our motivational systems as humans, we want to grow. And what grow means is I have to get up the ladder. And up the ladder means skinnier and skinnier and skinnier, so fewer and fewer options.
Yeah.
So I think that we've created that. And my hope is that, I mean, it's probably a bigger conversation, and that's probably not the exact one we're going to have today around, I think it, we're moving in this direction anyways, and it's only going to speed up, is rethinking our organizational structures to take some of that out of the equation. But given the here and the now, look, let's go back to hierarchical structures. I was in the military, right? And I think there's a lot of really cool stuff that I learned. And one was the military didn't seem to have this problem. And the reason I think it didn't have this problem is because when you join the military, it's very clear, this is your rank, this is your years in service. Mm. I can look at that chart any day. If there's somebody that's above me and I can say that person is rank 4 and that's been here six years, I know what their base salary is. Everybody knows what their base salary is. And I know what processes they have to go through. They have to test. They have to wait so many years before they can test. It's very transparent and it's fair. Fair to a point that's probably really hard for most corporate organizations. But my point is that I think if we're going to be hierarchical, the closer we can get to really deep transparency and fairness in our compensation is the only way to do this. Number one, because we're creating problems. And the reality is, I think organizations like it to not be clear. They like to hide behind it because there's some short wins here and there. But in the end, it's kind of tricky, and it creates this bigger problem. On the flip side, I love that you asked this question, because one of the things that I did at CultureAmp, which is interesting because I know that's what you're doing now at Oyster, was help build our community. And when you build community, to me, as a organizational psychologist, I had to build something and think about something where compensation was absolutely not on the table. So what motivates people outside of compensation? And I think some of these things hold true: agency, autonomy, access, you know, in this case, probably access to development. In the case of community, access to, I get tickets to conferences, I get to sit in the front row, I get to meet with the CEO. Believe it or not, like swag, pins, hoodies, thank you gifts. And I, you know, I wrote here, I also had a note, appreciation, not compensation. Meaning even if you do a thank you gift as appreciation, not as, as soon as you make a compensation, then people start competing for compensation. Like, create an environment where you show appreciation. It's amazing. And I've seen this in so many places, even with the community. But I remember talking to Erica Kuhl when we were building our community, who helped build the Trailblazer community at LinkedIn for 19 years. She talked about the different hoodies. And when you go to Salesforce's conferences, people know the different community hoodies. And if you have one of the gold ones from 2017, you're known. Like, that's status. So I would just encourage organizations to be really clear and transparent on how you pay. If you make exceptions, share why you made those exceptions. And then think about the other human needs that people want. Growth, you know, they want to feel like they're building something, doing something, agency, all that. That's probably a long-winded answer and a lot of stuff in there. But that's how I think about this non-compensation approach. By the way, I did recognition and rewards for a few years as well. So some of that's in there too.
Yeah. And I think you've hit the nail on the head with that piece on, you know, appreciation, not compensation, and that different people will need different things, right? I think sometimes companies, and, you know, we see this time and time again, apply this kind of cookie cutter approach to all problems, right? You know, we're going to solve compensation with just one approach. We're going to solve L&D with just one approach, engagement with just one approach. But people are humans, you know, and humans have different motivation systems. Some will be more intrinsically motivated by, like you said, agency and autonomy, and others will be more extrinsically motivated by certain types of, you know, more outward recognition or awards or whatever it might be. And so I think a big part of this conversation is really like tapping into the individual or the team-based, you know, growth and what they consider growth, because maybe what I consider growth versus what you consider growth, even Craig, on, you know, in this conversation could be very different.
And what is growth? When I was 28, how I would answer that question is different than that, you know, in my 40s. So,
exactly.
You know, and I think something that I saw, you saw at Culture Amp that I was really impressed with, it was something that they did. And I think it ties in as a good example. I'd never seen it before. But when it was time to go through the review, the performance review cycle, they would start by asking people how they wanted that to look. Basically, like, I'm not interested. I'm happy with my job. I don't even want to waste the time right now. Like, if you need to let me know, let me know. Second was a mid-weight. Like, let's check in. Tell me what's going on. I want to learn and grow. And the third was, it's time. And let's come up with a real plan. And each one attributed more time of the manager to the employee, which was nice and efficient. But also, again, we talked about agency. It made me realize not everybody is ready. Not everyone wants to go through that thing every 6 months. And maybe there's a lightweight way to do it, because they're fine. If the organization's happy, they're living up to their what they set out to do. They're raising a family. They've got other things going on. Like, maybe that's perfectly fine as well. So I just think it's that, you know, agency comes in all shapes and packages, even around your development. We have to be careful not to set up only one. If we're not careful, it's like, but we still send the message that there's just one way to grow here. If not, something's wrong.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And you're really making me think about, you know, my career so far. And definitely in the beginning, for me, growth was like progressing, this kind of hierarchical, you know, progression upwards and, you know, promotion and getting a different role, different title, seniority. Whereas now I very much see it as like expanding laterally. Like, can I learn new skills or apply something in a different way or work with this other team? And that's what fills me rather than kind of this more hierarchical structure, which is super interesting.
And maybe it goes back to, you know, it's funny, is I was talking about my personal purpose. When I got clear on that, I'm not saying that there aren't moments where I'm, you know, looking to develop and I have to, you know, put kids through school and all that. But when I got clear on my purpose, it helped me make, I was making decisions for the wrong reasons before. If it's just about the promotion, if it's just about money, we often will chase and find ourselves in a really bad situation because we kind of put our blinders on. So I think you're anybody, as you approach your career, yes, chase all those things. But if you're not clear on what you're doing and why you're trying to achieve it, you can find yourself in some bad spots. So it's like, find that guiding, you know, and that might be your work for 5 years, is to figure out what that is. And some of those bad experiences for me helped me understand, but it became a beacon. So at least I knew how well am I aligned with where I'm heading. And I will say that's partly on the employee, that no company's going to do that for you. So there's a responsibility on both sides that we all have to, like, a company's going to take what it can get, you know? And if you don't really want to be an accountant, and that's what you studied because your parents wanted you to be an accountant and you're miserable, you can't blame the company for that. Like, that's something you have to take care of.
That's really interesting. It is so interesting to see the way Craig's military background has influenced his career by shaping his interest in human behavior. I couldn't agree more when he was sharing his thoughts on rethinking organizational structures. Wherever we can break down these hierarchies, foster employee communities, and give access to external development opportunities, the direct benefits are so clear. With these things in mind, I asked Craig to share what these approaches look like when successful.
Well, I think there's a couple of things you just mentioned that really are, I think, long tails of the Industrial Revolution, right? That, like, when you mentioned this individualization of how we approach employees, that sounds really good today. And I think it's, you know, for the last five to 10 years, we can say that. But there was a time that wasn't really functional, you know? And I think it comes from how we originally built these large organizations. It had to be, and again, the triangle. So the only way to do it was to come up with policies that could scale and say, adapt to these policies. And we created building blocks inside of the structure, which were the roles. And those building blocks were like Legos that stack on top of each other. And that was a way that we could build organizations. And the truth is, I'm really careful because I want to honor what was and at the time how progressive it was. But we've clearly run that model out. I don't think it aligns with where kind of people are, humans are today, given lots of other reasons with, you know, that what that was solving for. That's not the case anymore, like knowledge transfer and data transfer and all that. So our world's changed. I think the pressure is out there. So to your question, what have I seen? I mean, I think one is really thinking about the skills and how can you develop your employees' skills in the particular area that they're in, maybe understanding what else they're interested in and seeing other ways that would support the company and support. Like you and I have both had really good opportunities along the way to do these unique things, right? I was hired to work with our clients at Coltramp, but I also got to go help build conferences and a community. And the fact that I was able to navigate that and leverage my skill set, like I did not go into Coltramp knowing that, I mean, I knew I loved experiences and I love theater and music and all that. But when I finally got to help build something, I saw that I had an experienced designer in me and a facilitator in me at levels that I didn't know. And it wasn't super shocking, but I had this opportunity that was tangential to my job that brought value to the organization and to me and brought me a lot of satisfaction, even though I didn't always think the compensation was the best, right? Mm-hmm. Or whatever it might be. So I think I'd say to leaders is the better you can just get on a very get clear and transparent, fair. And some of this has to be done at the org. This is policy stuff. This is organizational stuff. So I also want to say that I know there's a lot of leaders and managers that are dealing with external things that are hard for them to change, but the best that they can possibly know their people individually, what drives them, what are those things? If you can just say to them, I get pay is important and I'll do what I can, but let's take that off the table. What else do you want to get out of this? Mm-hmm. You know, really understand it and try to individualize. So back to what we spoke about, we can do it today. We have the tools and technology to individualize for people. And I think it's pushing mm-hmm. managers to get out of the one size fits all. And it's okay, as long as we stay by our values and like certain structural things that we need to do, that we can custom tailor experiences for each individual employee. And that can be tracked, like that can be managed now, which it couldn't 20 years ago, that would have been so hard to do.
Yeah. And I think, you know, asking the individual is so key here, right? Because so many times in manager, like one-on-ones, you get to just the kind of firefighting task, right? Like what needs to be done right now or what needs to be achieved, what results, what goals need to be achieved. And it's always, not always, but it can often be very results focused. Whereas I think sometimes we just need to allow like a little bit of space, a little bit of time for these conversations where it's like, oh, wow, Craig, I didn't realize that you were very much into, you know, these aspects that are more community focused. How can we get you to be more involved in that? And that already is a non-promotion based growth strategy because I'm not promoting you. I'm just giving you access to a world that I was not giving you access to before. And I see that a lot, I think, in high growth companies, which is exciting because we need people to help in lots of different areas and teams. So it's kind of opening the door in ways that maybe you didn't even imagine existed before. And it's non-promotion. So it's kind of a win-win across the board.
I agree. I told you I had some different unique experiences along the way. One was those years that I worked in, you know, recognition. And a fundamental kind of takeaway from that, that I have looked across all the work I've done since and it holds is that, and I think it's even the work at Coltramp is fundamentally, people want to be seen and heard.
Yeah.
And it's so interesting. Now, I know we're talking about the manager to the individual, but even, you know, I work a lot with leadership teams. When we run surveys, so much of the work is afterwards trying to get them not to try to like jump and do everything and simply pick one or two things and go back to the company and say, here's what we heard. And but the reason is the psychology of it. That people want to feel seen and heard. And sometimes organizations get so caught up in trying to do everything that people don't see what's going on. And now they're spinning all their wheels. They're doing great stuff. People don't know. The scores still look awful versus if you said, hey, we heard you. Here's what we heard. This is what we heard and why we think it's important. Over the next 6 months, here's what you can expect. It's amazing. So I think it's the same thing, but at scale. It's this conversation with your people and figuring out ways to listen to them and incorporate what... even if I did a survey and the thing you landed on wasn't exactly what I said, but you just came back and shared with me why what I said was important, but like there's something bigger here, I'll probably be like, okay, fair enough. You listen. Like I see that. So I think it's so interesting that that's the work that I do with companies too, is you think it's all about the data, but really it's not. It's after the data is done saying, don't try to do it all. Like don't miss the big picture of being responsive and building an iteration with. And I think the same can be out for managers. Like, yes, you got all these things, but the truth is you can't do everything and fix every problem. But if you can get really clear with each employee, what are the big ones if we were to focus on one or two that I can help you with, and you can mm-hmm. do something, my sense is you are going to outperform all other managers before anything else you do next.
Yeah. And like you say, right, the data piece is the first piece. It's giving you the answers, but then you actually have to create the solution yourself, right? And take action. It's not just about, you know, surveying all the time, continuously.
And nobody's going to solve it for you. And, you know, Carmen, I think that's an important thing, especially in a role like I have and that you've done, is I can be a part of that journey. I can help you. But it goes back to that thing of you're running around trying to compare yourself to other companies. You are your own culture, your own thing. We can be influenced by that. We can learn from that. I can bring you a lot of information. But at the end of the day, I don't sit in your culture all day long. I want to enable you and give you some frameworks. But like, you got to own this. There's no magic bullet. No one's coming to save your culture from you.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, very true. Very true. And so, Craig, what about if a company starts implementing, you know, several non-promotion-based strategies like the ones we've been talking about? How can we actually measure the success of that? So tell me more.
Okay. So I feel like, I guess there's the theme that I talk a lot about. And I keep going back to it. But this goes back to what we spoke about before of not seeing a data collection or survey as one and done. It's part of an employee listening program. Your survey is a piece of that. It's about collecting, interpreting, understanding, making educated, informed decisions, and then taking action and then repeating. And I share that because I think that's the model that we have to use for probably, the truth is we probably do it for sales and marketing and everything else. We run a program, a campaign, we see how it performed, we tweak and we do it again. So I think our organizations need to get more, understand that it's not so obscure as it may seem or feel, that it's not that difficult to get set up with something like that. And it is to not, I've worked with companies where they want to start working and then they say, then we'll get to setting up data. And I struggle with that because it's like going to a doctor and saying, just give me medicine and then we'll start to figure out what to do about it. And it's like, can we just run the test? Let's get a baseline. And again, you and I know we can take that data and slice it down to team level, to organizational level. So maybe it's working with a manager and their particular team or director. So even when we talk about non-promotion based, if you're throwing spaghetti at the wall and you don't even know what your people want, like it's probably going to be inefficient. So I'd start by saying, put in place some sort of valid and reliable tool that's going to help you get some information that you believe and that you think your employees believe in so that you can get kind of level set. Then decide what those things are that are important to your people. Some companies, it really is compensation. Usually it's not. Most times it's open and honest way of communication. When people aren't doing what they're supposed to be doing, we do something about it. Like, you know, and if I could go to you and say, that's the thing and your data, that's the highest driver of overall engagement and what we want, let's focus there. So I would start with, it's great you think you know, but the truth is I know most, you don't know. You know some things, you don't know other things. And we know that because every time I run surveys and do data, we always find people are, we validate some things and we blow up the ideas of other things. So I know that you see this all the time. So first is like, let's get the data in front of everybody. Let's make sure we have a sense of let's all be talking on the same page. Make some calculated bets based on data. Go back, communicate those things to your team. Check in along the way. And then at certain increments, check again, because maybe it's time to iterate. Maybe you did a great job there and it's time to move on to something else. So I think the way I answer that question is, again, and it's funny because I'm not the biggest data person, but I know the power of it. So it's, can you quantify and validate what you're doing and why you're doing it? Communicate that to your people, do it, see how it goes and iterate and just keep, it's an iterative process.
Yeah. You know, what you're saying, it seems that the metrics and the measurement is part of the entire process, right? To try and even figure out what you're trying to do.
Think of other things in your life. Imagine that you have a medical issue and you're trying to fix something without any data.
Yeah.
And, you know, and what do doctors do? They want to run a lot of data to start to peel things off that they can rule out. So ultimately, you know exactly what, you know, at least have a framework for what you think you're looking and what's your most important area of focus based on some data. And I think it's the same thing with culture. It's just more of a diagnostic approach.
Yeah, absolutely. Because then that also gives you the benchmark, right? Because when you've got that initial data piece and then you do something about it, you can benchmark the results based on that initial data piece. So it's,
Can I share a story real quick? I mean, just it comes to mind.
Please.
So last year, 2023, I was involved in a project and it was an executive coach came to me and said, there's a new CEO who's my prospective client. He's been a CEO before. He's taken over this company. It's going through some turmoil and he wants to do culture transformation. And in his mind, that meant I want to get coaching for every executive and I want to run 7 executive offsites over the course of the year because they were distributed. So getting everybody together.
Yeah.
So she came to me and said, would you be interested in running the offsites? That was not her interest. She wanted to do the coaching. And my first question was, I'm interested, but like, tell me about their data. And we met with the chief people officer And we found out that I was impressed. Like, they'd gotten there, they were using good questions, but they're using Google surveys. That was very basic. And they weren't able to slice and dice it. They weren't able to get answers quickly and in real time or anything they could just, you know, lead a one-day offsite with executives around. So I said, I'll do this work, but there's one thing we have to do. We have to put in a tool. We have, and honestly, it was a drop in the bucket compared to the project.
Mm.
And number one, I'm happy it showed me that I stuck to my guns and what I believed in. I was happy to do the work, but I couldn't do it by just getting in a room and just sitting around listening to people talk and speculate. I'm happy I insisted on that. And we decided we'd run it twice. We'd run it at the beginning of the project and we'd run it at the end of the project. And it was such a powerful year for me, one to put all that to practice. But the reality is, by starting off that journey, by running that survey and digging into it with the executives and letting that be a layer to inform how we did work over the course of the year, and then running it again at the end of the year, it was amazing. And we got amazing results. I mean, one of the great stories was that we called out one of their offices was horribly off compared to others. And the CEO knew there were problems there. I mean, he knew there were lots of problems, but when he saw it quantifiably, he said, that's it, I'm getting down there. And he went down, he spent time with them. He did it twice over the 6 months. Their scores came up 15 points in engagement. And I kept thinking to myself, if we didn't put that in place, we'd be left to whatever narrative. Who knew? Mm-hmm. But when that project was over, the way they felt about the work that we did and the impact that they were. So I always think about that. Gosh, if we did that work and all the things we saw, that I don't know if the CEO had a bad day or was unhappy with some financial results, might have said that this was a big waste of time. And you know what? It's been a year since we worked together. I just interviewed him the other day and he's still raving at someone that, you know, that approach. So, but I think it's because we put data in front of him. So he had something to hang it on.
Mm-hmm. So this is making me think about, you know, how can we best communicate this, right? So I'm sold, you're sold, the exec is sold, the people and culture teams are sold. How do we make sure that, you know, when we implement a new strategy or make changes or measure or whatever it might be, when we communicate that back to the employees, that they actually do feel seen and they do feel heard, and that communication stream is something that we do effectively.
Again, it's funny you say that, because such a big part of the work that I do is not just getting them on a survey, it's seeing the big picture, what it means. How do we do that? We do it by, number one, so many times you talk to organizations and they quickly just start blaming the employees. Well, they don't participate. Well, they don't do this. Like, well, who's in charge here? You know, first of all, maybe there's problems. If they don't participate, they probably don't trust you. So why don't we run something? And even if they don't, if we see that in the results, then let's use it as an opportunity to start building trust and saying, okay, we get it. Not everybody did, but this is what we did learn. And we're going to do this one thing. And we're going to run it again in 6 months. I bet you if you do that and you follow through, your numbers will go up. So number one, I put onus on the organizations. We've all gotten here, you know, and employees have a lot of feelings because of what's happened up to this point. So it's our role to unpack that. I think the other thing is, again, going back to what I keep hitting on, that running these programs is not about just the leaders. If it's just about leaders getting data, it's just another data gathering initiative, we're missing the mark. We have to see it as these are about. We run these programs to be in conversation with our employees. And if we start there and share, this is what we heard, this is what you can expect, then do it and then repeat and keep doing that, it will naturally happen. But as soon as you pull the employees out and they feel like they don't have a say, then you've removed agency. And even if you're doing the stuff they want, there's a natural resistance if I don't feel I'm in control of what's happening around me. So I think that's really important. But I mean, I do believe it's really do the process and it'll follow. But it's stop blaming employees. Like, organizations lead the way. We are hierarchical. We have a few people that run the show, you know, so it's important that those people show and lead the way and then ask others to do that as well.
Mm-hmm. And also that they actually do what the feedback is saying, right? Because I've seen this a lot in companies before where, with regards to non-promotion-based strategies, maybe employees are saying, hey, we want more opportunities to work with other teams, or we want more opportunities to mentor, or whatever it might be. And then, you know, they write that in the survey, they communicate it, it's something that's, you know, transparent. And then the leadership team doesn't actually do something about that and implements, you know, again, this kind of one size fits all approach or a different approach to growth. So, yeah, I've seen that a lot, actually, which is interesting, because then we're gathering the data, but we're not actually listening to the data. And yeah, tell me more about this.
What comes to mind for me is, how can we be, you know, I almost think as social psychologists, like, there are hacks. I mean, one hack is really simple that you and I both know. Put a question in there that says, I believe that change will happen because of the survey.
Mm-hmm.
Just put that question in there. You know what? When I sit with a group of leaders and I say that people, 30% of your people believe anything's going to happen because of the survey, now that becomes a data point that's relevant. And I'm telling them, they don't even trust that you're going to do anything. make that a data point. Same thing. I mean, the other hack is, you know, that some companies say that we want our managers to review this with their teams. We want our teams to be right. And that's important. Yeah. Put the question, my manager or somebody, you know, in a senior position has reviewed the survey with me on your following survey. Ask the question. Like, you don't need to do anything else because, believe me, we're all driven by how we're seen and rated by others. If that question's in there, every manager sees that question's in there. It sends a powerful signal. But again, if those scores drop and it's horrible, no one says a word about it, then you might as well don't ask the question because you're just going to say that we don't care. So mm-hmm. I think there are hacks to this, but the reality is do it. Like, commit to listening. I heard you. Here's what I heard. Here's what you can expect. Do it. Check in on it. And then ask again, how did we do?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that also allows you to see perhaps where the challenges lie, right? Because it could be that one team is nailing non-promotion-based strategies, right? They've got lots of opportunities, lots of different ways that you can be growing and developing. And then another team, the manager is very much, you know, just task-based and not growth-based. And that's when you can really start to divide and see across the board.
I mean, I love it. You know, you'll know. And look, you and I also both know that another thing that stood out to me over the years, I think it shifted a little bit as the economy's changed, but still across most surveys, compensation is not a strong driver of engagement. So what we're really talking, I mean, when you say non-promotion based, I mean, there's the promotion element, but I also think it's probably about getting additional, you know, dollars. Yep. And the reality is the data tells us that that's typically not, once they get that money, it starts going to their bank account, life goes back to normal. So you might as well get past it quickly, you know, get a comp plan that you feel good about, that you feel is fair, and then start looking at every other thing. Because to your point, like, if you can pinpoint the other things that really matter and use, like, say, these things in your data or in your team, point to the strongest things that people are looking for, go do that. They want recognition. How can you help your team do better about recognizing one another? Solve that problem. Mm-hmm.
So what happens, playing devil's advocate here, what happens if there is negative feedback to, you know, other growth programs that we've been talking about, or there is very specific, you know, employees or teams that really do want to be incentivized by promotions? How can people leaders navigate this situation?
So the devil's advocate here is, what if people really want to be incentivized by money and you've quantified that and you realize that? I mean, it's like a sales team, right? I don't know. Build a really cool commission bonus program that incentivizes people on money. You know, the other thing I've always said about organizations is, like, I'm not precious about organizations. Build what's right. I was in the military. You know, the 82nd Airborne, which my brother was in, I was not in, is tasked with having 70,000 troops anywhere in the world in 24 hours. If you're the commanding officer of the 82nd Airborne Division, your job's not to build an iterative software company. Your job is to have a force of 70,000 people ready to move in 24 hours. That's a pretty intense, and be combat ready. That's a pretty big. So build for that, you know, and be clear, like, what you're doing. And we need regiment, and we need training, and we need process, and things happen slowly because we have 70,000 people that need to be updated if we change something, even if it's the best thing for you, which is different than if you're a technology company that really needs to be iterative and move quickly, you know. So first is, like, what are you building? Be honest with what you're building, because another question we see is, like, this job or this role is what I was described to me. One of the biggest detriments to engagement is people show up and their job is different than what they were sold, right? Mm-hmm. So tell them. I mean, if you're a banking firm on Wall Street, say, we value money, we value growth, and we value competition. Mm-hmm. And then go for it and be honest. But, you know, when you see things like, I think about big stories like Wells Fargo a years back when they got into all that trouble where they were all about opening bank accounts. And then you had hundreds of people doing illegal activity, probably not even quite, they were just so under pressure to achieve the outcome that they forgot about the input. And, like, how do you want to go about it? How do you say that we behave here? Build the machine that's designed right for what you're looking to do. Be intentional about that. And then use those listening efforts. So that was the question you asked. Two was, what if you get negative feedback? So one of the questions I always ask organizations as we design a survey is, I'm really intentional. If we ask this question and it comes back really low, are you prepared to do something? And it could be something like, hey, I have flexibility on my schedule, but you're running a grocery store with hourly employees that have really not a lot of say in their schedule. Don't ask that question if you're not prepared to do anything. So I think it's also being, questions send signals. So be really intentional with what you're asking. But if you're asking it and it comes back negative, you should be prepared to have a hard conversation and defend why or why not you're going to do something about it.
Yeah. Absolutely. And I think that ties back, you know, full circle to the beginning of our conversation around, you know, people join a company because of the L&D opportunities, and then they leave the company because of the L&D opportunities. So somewhere in between, we're not being honest and we're not being transparent or fair. So if we solve that honesty piece, then, you know, you're getting the people in the door for the right reasons, and hopefully and likely they will stay because they are motivated and they joined with honest intentions because you were honest about why they joined.
Exactly. Yeah. And I also think it's important to say too, because, you know, there are the situations where somebody joins a company and then it's BS and it's not what they were told. But the other reality is that companies exist in a very evolving, shifting world. Companies change, companies raise money, companies grow. And one of the biggest tragedies is that sometimes people join a company that really does believe what it says, but as it changes and grows, it keeps trying to say it's that same thing. And it's like, can you build the core infrastructure on your mission, your vision, your mission, and your core values that you believe can exist through time, that are going to drive the organization, that are the core fundamentals, and that can flex and evolve as things change, and you stay honest with your people? Because I think what happens is, and I've seen so many good companies, and they were good, and then they went through rapid growth and they kept acting like they were all mission driven, but at the same time, they raised lots and lots and lots of money and didn't talk the reality that we have new pressures here. And then all of a sudden, what once felt good starts to feel at conflict. And that's a really, so it's like, think long-term as an organization. If we grow, how do we support this? And that's a big conversation a lot of organizations, as you grow or shrink, what stays and what shifts? Culture has to be fluid. It has to shift. You're not going to take everybody to an offsite. Maybe at 50 you did, but at 500 you're not. But if people think that's your culture, then you're in trouble. But maybe that's at our culture, we believe in connection, bringing people together. That can look different ways.
Oh, I love this. And I think, you know, to be at the forefront of the future of work and the way that the work is going, culture has to be fluid in order to thrive.
I mean, that's probably one of the problems, is that people think it's static and they try to solve for something in one moment and they get frustrated. And that goes back to this iterative process we spoke about. If you approach this as like, this is a sales problem I need to solve, this is a financial equation if I get right, you're never going to get there. I think you have to have the approach of, this is a process and a system that is always on, that we're always in response to, and we evolve and adapt with our people in real time and the environment. You know, sometimes you have to do layoffs, but you can do them in better ways than others, you know, and how do you set yourself up for long-term success, even if you have to do that?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Craig, I could honestly talk to you all day, but I have one final question for you that we ask all of our guests on New World of Work. And it is, what is the best mistake that you've ever made and why?
This is such a good question. Well, I'll just tell you what comes to mind right now. I don't know. This is a hard one. I could probably come up with a different answer each day. A year and a half ago, I started my own business. And I'm going to say, and then I'll back up why I'm saying this. Why was starting my business the best mistake I ever made? What's coming to mind for me is because I was 20 years corporate. I always wanted to do this. It's been a big dream. And it's still, I'm doing it. We'll see how it goes. But the reality is, it's forcing me to realize that every day is a series of mistakes. When you do something new, so it's the best mistake because I've made so many mistakes, but like it's the reality. They're not mistakes. They're just, I always think mistakes are kind of only a past tense judgment. Like if we, in the present, we make decisions, we'll decide later if they're mistakes. But building a business and doing it right now, pretty much on my own, I'm starting to have some people around me, which is amazing, is allowing myself to make mistakes, to set up that deal, to realize like I would have structured it differently next time. That's why it didn't work. Okay, I'll structure it. And just seeing them as wins, like, at least there's a new deal, and I have to figure out, how do you best sell this? How do companies really want, you know, is it a package or is it a long-term thing? So I'm making mistakes every day. And I answer that question almost as affirmation for me in building a business, to keep making mistakes and keep learning from those mistakes. So that would be my answer today.
Amazing. Thank you. Thank you for sharing. And thank you for the wonderful insights today. I've learned so much, and I'm sure that our listeners have as well. So thanks a million.
Thank you. Can I real quickly just plug, just like if anyone's getting in touch with me? I mean, first and foremost, like LinkedIn. I love LinkedIn. Reach out to me on LinkedIn. You can like find my website and everything from there. If not, as it stands, I'm going to change this soon, but my website is still culturecraig.com, and that will still direct you to wherever it switches to. Please come there, learn more about me, the work that we're doing, reach out to me. And Carmen, I just appreciate, thanks for the space. And like, this conversation was thoughtful, and we all need to work together. Like, we're not going to do this alone. And I just appreciate voices like you and supporting people like me to help amplify and share with more people what we can be doing and how to think about this.
Absolutely. Craig gave us some amazing insights to learn from. Here are my key takeaways. Prioritize genuine appreciation. Recognition doesn't have to be complex to be impactful. Whether it's a thoughtful thank you, team acknowledgement, or small tokens like swag, consistent appreciation can significantly boost employee morale and engagement. It's a simple yet powerful way to make your team feel valued. Commit to continuous listening. Employee feedback isn't a one-time task. It's an ongoing strategy. Regularly collecting and analyzing data allows you to track progress, celebrate wins, and identify areas for improvement. As Craig emphasized, this data is not just for tracking. It's a tool to drive meaningful conversations with leadership and champion positive change. Honesty in employer branding. Dissatisfaction with compensation or job roles often stems from a lack of transparency during recruitment. Organizations must clearly communicate their values, priorities, and role expectations upfront. This approach helps ensure new hires join for the right reasons and feel their compensation fairly reflects the work that they do.